Today is Thursday, September 23rd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden pledges extra half a billion doses of Pfizer vaccine.
For every one shot we've administered to date in America, we have now committed to do three shots to the rest of the world.
Plus, France envoy returns to Washington after nuclear spat.
We have to deal with this pandemic and the COVID-19. We have to face a lot of challenges, a lot of crisis, climate change, and for all these issues, what we need is cooperation.
Also, WHO issues new guidelines for improving air quality. Our top story today is in New York. The UN General Assembly pledged Wednesday to redouble efforts to combat racism around the world, commemorating a landmark but contentious 2001 anti-racism conference by holding an anniversary meeting once again, riven with divisions. Looking back on the two decades since the conference in Durban, South Africa, the Assembly adopted a resolution that acknowledged some progress, but deplored what it called a rise in discrimination, violence, and intolerance directed at people of African heritage and many other groups, from the Roma to refugees, the young to the old, people with disabilities to people who have just been displaced. At a meeting focused on reparations and racial justice for people with African heritage, the Assembly pointed to the effect of slavery, colonialism, and genocide, and called for ensuring that people of African descent can seek, quote, adequate reparation or satisfaction, unquote, through national institutions. President Felix Tshisekedi of Congo said reparations, however they might be provided, should reflect not only historic wrongs, but also, quote, this cause of racial inequality, subordination, and discrimination, which were built under slavery, apartheid, and colonialism, unquote. The Assembly's resolution also noted ills caused by religious prejudices, including anti-Muslim, anti-Semitic, and anti-Christian bias. Israel, the United States, and some other countries boycotted the meeting because of continued grievances about the Durban meeting 20 years ago. U.S. President Joe Biden convened a virtual COVID-19 summit Wednesday on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly to rally world leaders, philanthropists, non-governmental organizations, and industry to defeat the virus by the end of 2022. He also announced an additional donation of half a billion doses of the Pfizer vaccine. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara has more.
Let's recommit in the fight to end the pandemic. That's the message that U.S. President Joe Biden sent to world leaders at the virtual COVID-19 summit he convened on Wednesday. He announced donating 500 million more doses of the Pfizer vaccine, increasing the total U.S. pledge to 1.1 billion doses.
For every one shot we've administered to date in America, we have now committed to do three shots to the rest of the world.
It's not clear when these shots will be delivered. About 200 million doses from the initial 500 million pledge Biden announced in June will ship by end of 2021, 300 million by mid-2022. Biden also announced an additional $750 million to get those shots in arms around the world and $1.4 billion to reduce COVID-19 deaths and transmission. Humanitarian organizations welcome more vaccines but say wealthy nations cannot donate their way out of the pandemic.
Donations are done at the discretion of the donor. There's very little accountability for delivery. Already seen hundreds of millions of doses pledged by wealthy governments, similar to the United States, other countries in Europe, with a pretty poor delivery rate so far. So we need doses in arms right now.
Biden also called on leaders to address a worldwide shortage of oxygen for COVID patients and to make tests, PPE, and therapeutics more available. Another key target, preparing for and preventing future pandemics. The U.S. is calling for the creation of a financial intermediary fund for pandemic preparedness at the World Bank.
We, the United States, are prepared to contribute at least $250 million to help get this fund started. We have also requested an additional $850 million from the United States Congress.
According to Doctors Without Borders, fewer than 2% of people in developing countries have received even a single dose of COVID vaccine, while the U.S. has secured enough to protect its entire population of 330 million people and still have more than half a billion doses left over. The U.S. also has been criticized for its plan to provide booster shots for older Americans and those with underlying conditions, despite calls from the World Health Organization that wealthy nations instead give extra doses to countries with low vaccination rates. The administration says it can give boosters and help vaccinate the world, but the goal will depend on a robust vaccine manufacturing capacity. One way to quickly boost capacity is to force vaccine producers to waive the patent on vaccine technology through the so-called TRIPS waiver at the World Trade Organization. The Biden administration said in May it supports the waiver together with more than 100 other countries, but without the backing of all members, the proposal is languishing at the WTO. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told VOA the administration expects the process to be slow.
But that's never been the only basket that we're focused on. We've also been focused on increasing supply or vaccine supply to the world, where we provide more vaccines to the world than any other country in the world combined. We've also been working with countries on manufacturing capacity and making sure they have the materials they need.
Focus will also be on Friday's Quad Summit among the U.S., India, Japan, and Australia to see how it is fulfilling its March commitment to produce 1 billion doses in India by 2022 with financial backing from the U.S. and Japan. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
U.S. President Joe Biden promised to boost funding up to $11.4 billion to help developing nations cope with the ravages of climate change and build green economies during his speech at the United Nations General Assembly. He also pledged his administration's resolve to work for the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and improve regional and international cooperation in tackling global issues. Some are skeptical of his commitment. For more, I spoke with VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Widakuswara.
Stressing again his America is back message to the world, and says that the era for relentless war has ended and now is the new era of relentless diplomacy. How is the world reacting to this message? Well, it really depends. We have allies, for example, who are very much concerned about the fact that the U.S. left Afghanistan in such a messy and chaotic fashion that has created alarm in many world capitals and questions about the staying power and the loyalty that the U.S. has with its allies, particularly its allies in Europe, who felt blindsided by this, particularly France and as well as Britain and other NATO allies, who say that they were not consulted in the Afghanistan withdrawal. The other thing that's also clouding President Biden's message at the UNGA is the recent AUKUS deal that's between Australia and the U.S. as well as Britain, where the U.S. and Britain promises Australia that they will supply nuclear-powered submarines. This is obviously in response to China's growing power in the South China Sea and in the Indo-Pacific region. This is creating a lot of issues with France because France felt blindsided again because they already had a deal with Australia to provide diesel-powered submarines, which now has been scuttled. So perhaps there is a sigh of relief around the world that the message that President Joe Biden is bringing to the UN is not the message that President Donald Trump brought to the UN, which is that we reject the doctrine of globalism, we don't like multilateralism, and it will always be America first. But there's questions about the implementation of Joe Biden's doctrine of multilateralism, considering past events, including Afghanistan and the AUKUS deal.
Would you call this a reset of his international diplomacy or just a clarification of a certain misunderstood part of his foreign diplomacy?
It really is a new leaf, a departure from the Trump administration's America First policy. This is, as Joe Biden has said, a new era of relentless diplomacy. But the question of implementation remains to be seen. Those issues that I have mentioned before, Afghanistan, as well as AUKUS, as well as this idea that the U.S. wants to galvanize allies in its strategic competition with adversaries, particularly China, as well as Russia, that remains to be seen. The world is looking to see how the implementation is, whether it's going to create peace and stability or whether it's going to create more tensions in the world.
Talking about implementation, the president also announced half a billion doses of Pfizer COVID vaccine. How soon will this shot get into the arms of people all over the world?
That is a big question because, you know, this is 500 million new doses. That makes a total of U.S. pledge for donation 1.1 billion doses. So the initial 500 million doses pledge was made in June, and even that has not been all delivered. I think the target is to deliver 200 million by the end of this year, and then the rest of the initial 500 mid of next year. All these rich countries, including the U.S., make all these pledges, but in terms of delivery, it really is up to the discretion of the donor, and that's a problem. However, President Joe Biden, as well as White House officials, have been saying that this is the biggest donation that any country has ever made. For every one shot that is given to an American, the U.S. has pledged 3 shots to give to the world, even though the administration has also promised not just the doses, but also about $750 million for the delivery of these shots to get them in arms around the world.
That's VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Widescuara speaking with me in Washington. French President Emmanuel Macron will send his ambassador back to the United States after President Joe Biden agreed that consulting France before announcing a security pact with Australia could have prevented a diplomatic dispute, Macron's office said last week. France recalled its ambassador from the United States and Australia after the US and Britain signed a nuclear submarine deal with Australia, causing Canberra to scrap a previous $40 billion French-designed submarine deal. On Wednesday, Macron and Biden had a phone call in which the two leaders agreed to launch an in-depth consultations to rebuild trust. Macron's LC department said Macron and Biden will meet in Europe at the end of October. The U.S. also committed to boost its support to counterterrorism missions led by European nations in Africa's Sahel region, added Macron's office.
I want to thank you for our discussion yesterday and the working sessions we had, indeed. We have to deal with this pandemic and the COVID-19. We have to face a lot of challenges, a lot of crisis, climate change. And for all these issues, what we need is cooperation. And I think it's great to have the U.S. president part of the club and very willing to cooperate. And I think that what you demonstrate is that leadership is partnership. And we do appreciate, and I think we can deliver great things for that.
That's French President Emmanuel Macron. The World Health Organization is issuing new guidelines on improving global air quality, which it says could save many of the 7 million lives that are lost each year to pollution. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Nothing is more essential to life than air. Yet every year, the World Health Organization reports 7 million people die prematurely because the air they breathe is toxic. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says inhaling dirty air increases the risk of pneumonia, asthma, and chronic obstructive pulmonary diseases, as well as non-communicable ailments, including heart disease, stroke, and cancers.
Air pollution is a health threat in all countries, but especially for vulnerable groups in low- and middle-income countries with poor air quality due to urbanization and rapid economic development, and air pollution in the home caused by cooking, heating, and lighting.
Since the WHO's last global update in 2005, a new body of evidence has emerged showing that humans suffer damage to their health at lower concentrations of air pollution than previously believed. Consequently, the WHO recommends lower air quality levels for 5 key pollutants, including nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and carbon monoxide. Maria Nera is director of the WHO's Department of Environment, Climate Change, and Health. She says a changeover to cleaner energy will improve people's health and mitigate global warming.
Moving to renewable and clean sources of energy, because this will have a very positive impact on reducing the greenhouse gases emissions and therefore tackling the causes of climate change and reducing air pollution. And both are critical pillars of our health.
Besides improving health and saving lives, reducing air pollution could also have enormous economic benefits. The World Bank estimates the global cost associated with health damage from ambient air pollution stands at $5.7 trillion a year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. lawmakers on both sides of the aisle on Wednesday criticized the treatment of thousands of Haitian migrants attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border as the U.S. increased deportation flights out of the state of Texas. The bipartisan criticism came as top Biden administration officials condemned images showing U.S. Border Patrol agents on horseback chasing migrants seeking asylum. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
The crossing between the U.S. and Mexico in Del Rio, Texas, locked down Wednesday. 35, 35. As thousands of Haitian migrants set up camp under the bridge between the two countries, waiting to cross and claim asylum. After startling images of Border Patrol agents on horseback detaining migrants earlier this week, a top U.S. Homeland Security official promised a swift investigation.
The images that emanated from Del Rio, Texas, over the last several days, and correctly and necessarily were met with our nation's horror, because they do not reflect who we are as a country, nor do they reflect who the United States Customs and Border Protection is.
The White House echoed those concerns while noting U.S. immigration policy still has to be followed at the border.
This has been an incredibly heart-wrenching issue. We've watched the photos of Haitians gathering under a bridge, many with families, and the horrific video of the CBP officers on horses using brutal and inappropriate measures against innocent people. I think it's important to address that and separately address what our immigration policies are and understand that people are combining them.
But congressional Republicans said the Biden administration's immigration policies directly caused this crisis.
This nightmare is the direct result of the left-wing policies and left-wing messages pushed by the Biden administration. They say their approach to immigration is the compassionate path, the one that reflects the soul of America. They are wrong.
The Border Patrol response also drew harsh criticism from Democrats, who probed the reasons Haitians in particular are being deported and called for an end to summary deportations initiated by the Trump administration based on the COVID-19 pandemic.
How much did race play a part in these actions? Are you looking into that as well? And also, have you considered this Trump relic of Title 42, not eliminating, but a suspension of it, in light of the fact that Haitians have been determined to be no national security threat?
With respect to Title 42 and its exercise, that is an authority of the Centers for Disease Control. It is not a matter of immigration policy. It is a matter of public health policy driven by the situation of COVID-19 and where the trajectory of that pandemic is.
Thousands of Haitian migrants are being released into the U.S. if they promise to appear at an immigration office within 60 days, while others are being deported on flights back to Haiti. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The U.S. Special Envoy for Haiti, Ambassador Daniel Foote, has resigned amid the mass deportation of Haitians who fled recent political turmoil and natural disasters at home, a public broadcasting service reporter reported in a Twitter post on Thursday. Quote, I will not be associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees and illegal immigrants to Haiti, a country where American officials are confined to secure compounds because of the danger posed by armed gangs in control of daily life, unquote, Foote said in his resignation letter. This is the voice of America. The European Union is unveiling plans that would require smartphone makers to adopt a single charging method for mobile devices. The EU Commission proposed legislation Thursday that would mandate USB-C cables for charging, technology that many device makers have already adopted. The main holdout is Apple, which has resisted the bloc's efforts for unified standard. Taiwan officials say the island has applied to join an 11-nation Pacific trade group that sets up a potential clash with rival Beijing. The Chinese government, which claims Taiwan as its territory, gave no details of how it might respond, but said the island has no right to join international bodies. A Taiwan cabinet minister said the island's application to join the comprehensive but progressive agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership might be disrupted if China, which applied last week, is admitted first. China on Thursday sent at least 24 fighter jets towards Taiwan, and the island's Air Force mobilized its jets to monitor them. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Booster dose of the Pfizer Inc. and BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine for those aged 65 and older and some high-risk Americans, paving the way for a quick rollout of the shots. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorized a booster shot of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine on Wednesday for Americans 65 and older and some considered high risk. The third jab is to be given at least 6 months after completion of the second dose. The FDA authorization would include people most vulnerable to the disease and in high-risk frontline jobs. President Joe Biden announced in August the government's intention to roll out booster shots for people aged 16 and older this week, pending approval by the FDA and CDC. A U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention advisory panel could vote on Thursday on the use of a third shot of the vaccine, according to an agency official earlier in the week. The FDA overwhelmingly rejected a call for broader approval, with top members split on the need for boosters for the general population. Some of the agency's senior scientists argued that current evidence does not support boosters for all those aged 16 and above. Some countries, including Israel and Britain, have started rolling out booster campaigns.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. After more than 18 months of COVID-19 isolation, Australia is preparing to reopen its international borders by Christmas, quote, at the latest, unquote. Trade, Tourism and Investment Minister Dan Tehan said some of the world's toughest coronavirus travel restrictions would be relaxed when 80% of Australians are fully vaccinated. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia has some of the world's toughest coronavirus travel restrictions. Since March 2020, entry has been banned for most foreign nationals, while quotas have been put on returning citizens and permanent residents, who face 2 weeks mandatory hotel quarantine when they arrive. Australians wanting to leave the country need government permission under strict rules implemented in an effort to curb the spread of COVID-19. Under a national reopening plan, Australians would be allowed to freely travel overseas again once 80% of people over 16 have been fully vaccinated. Just under half of the population has received two doses of a vaccine currently. The government also plans to allow returning Australians who've received approved vaccines, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Moderna and Johnson & Johnson, to quarantine at home. Australia plans to begin a trial of vaccine passports to facilitate travel to various countries, including the United States, Britain, Singapore and Japan. The digital documents, which would indicate that the holder has been fully inoculated, would be linked to so-called QR codes or type of barcode on a phone app. When scanned, they would show a copy of a passenger's passport and their vaccination status. Trade, Tourism and Investment Minister Dan Tehan hopes to have the system ready by late December.
We continue to do all that preparatory work so that when those international borders open, and as I said in my speech, hopefully at the latest by Christmas, that Australians will be able to travel with a QR code linked to their passport, which will be able to show a proof of vaccination.
Fully immunised foreigners would also be allowed to travel to Australia if they can prove their COVID-19 vaccination status. As an alternative to mandatory hotel quarantine, international travellers could self-isolate with family, friends or at their holiday accommodation. Australia's strict COVID-19 travel regulations have left many citizens and permanent residents stranded overseas. More than 44,000 Australians have registered to come home with the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Many airlines, including Singapore Airlines, recently cut commercial flights to Australia because of cuts to the number of Australians allowed home each week. Australia is the only democratic country to refuse entry to its citizens due to capacity constraints in the hotel quarantine system and impose restrictions on those wanting to leave the country. Australia has recorded about 90,000 coronavirus infections and 1,186 fatalities since the pandemic began. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Forest officials stepped up search operation to capture a tiger that has killed at least 15 people in India's western Gadchiroli districts as they looked for the animal on Wednesday. The big cat has terrorized villagers who are now scared to step out of their houses, even for work in the fields, as they fear the tiger might attack and kill them. Range Forest Officer Dilip Kushik said 100 to 150 camera traps had been set up at different locations in a bid to capture the tiger as soon as possible. The increasing human population has depleted the habitat of wild animals, forcing them to stray into human settlements, attacking people, and often getting killed in return. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.